I'm Jane Perrone and this is On The Ledge, and I've got a new catchphrase. Costing you money since 2017. Listener complaints are mounting. You're all telling me that you're spending a fortune on plants and you're blaming me. I am so sorry, not sorry, because buying plants is one of life's great pleasures. I would urge you to make sure that you can afford every plant that you buy, but hey, they're pretty cheap. Or you can always swap cuttings. There are lots of ways to expand your collection without spending a load of money, but I love the fact that you're all really investing in your plants and loving the show. Great to hear. If I say the word palm to you, what do you think of? It first brings to my mind the magnificence of the Palm House at Kew Gardens, a monument to the Victorian passion for palms. Then my mind wanders to the dramatic Art Deco hotels with vaulted glass ceilings and towering Kenja palms. And I also think about the tiny parlour palms I brought in Woolworths as a kid and squeezed into bottle gardens. Fast forward to 2018 and the palm remains one of our most popular and persistent houseplants. And yet, is it just me, or has the fiddle leaf fig somewhat stolen the palm's crown as the statement plant of the moment? I hope not, because I think palms have an awful lot to offer. I wanted to know what palms we should be growing and how best to look after these noble plants. Over to someone whose Miami, Florida home is overrun with the things.
My name is Scott Zona. I'm a botanist based in Miami, Florida, and I specialize in palms.
What's the most common palm question that you get asked when, you know, you're at a dinner party and somebody finds out you're into palms? What's the thing that the first thing people tend to say to you? Why has my parlor palm died?
No, actually, I think the first question I get is, are palms trees? That's a classic one, because, of course, here in Miami, we grow our palms, most of our palms outdoors. And so people make that distinction. It's sort of a meaningless distinction. I mean, they're big and they're woody. You can call them trees if you want. Botanists have really no actual definition of what is a tree. So we'll call them trees. I think a good place to start is, first of all, I want to clarify that I'm only going to be talking about rue palms, things in the palm family. A lot of things have a common name of palm, but they're not really palms. Like Madagascar palm is actually Pachypodium. It's in the milkweed family. The sago palm is actually a cycad. It's not even a flowering plant. So those are things that are not really palms. I'm going to be talking about the palm family, which is, well, there are about 2,500 species worldwide. And a large number of them are grown horticulturally. And of that, you know, kind of a smaller subset are perfect houseplants. They make tremendous houseplants. So we can talk about some of the most common ones that are available if you like.
The common names really do confuse us, because there are so many common plants that are called palms but aren't palms, called begonias and aren't begonias. It's a minefield for those of us trying to pick our way through garden centres and figure out things from plant labels and stuff. It's not made easy for us. I guess that's where the Latin name comes in, and that hopefully we can figure this out. One, I think the first palm that I ever grew was, and back in the day when I was first growing this palm, the Latin name was Neanthe bella, and I know the Latin name has changed now, but the parlor palm was my first encounter with palms, and I think it's still kind of my favorite, just because it's such a tough old boot.
It's a great houseplant, yeah. And they used to sell it here to tourists here in Florida along the interstate. You'd stop at the service stations, and they'd sell a little box up, and it would say, "Grow your own palm," and it was for Northerners to take back to the north. It's a great palm. It's still available and still widely cultivated.
How big would that grow if it was given ideal conditions? Because I always think of it as a tiny palm, but I'm imagining it can get a fair bit bigger than that, or does it stay really small?
It's a small understory palm to begin with. It grows deep in forests and of course, never gets really big. So maybe it would get, come up to your shoulder or up to your head in the wild and in ideal conditions. But as a house plant, they rarely get more than about, you know, 2 feet tall, really.
When you're buying palms, so often when you buy them very, very young, like the parlor palm, they come in a container in a big clump with multiple, what seems like to me, multiple plants. And I never know quite what to do in that situation, whether it's wise from the very first moment to divide those out individually or whether it's okay to have them growing as a group.
Yeah, that's a trick that a lot of the nurserymen use. They throw a whole handful of seeds in the pot so that you get a nice, full, lush-looking plant, even when the individual plants are quite small. And they do that even with plants that are naturally clustering multi-stem palms. And my advice is to enjoy it for a while as a cluster of palms. But the nice thing is you can divide it, especially as they start to get a little bit bigger, maybe the pot gets a little crowded looking. You can divide it and, you know, you get two or more plants for the price of one, basically. That's, like I said, they do that with almost all the palms that you see on the market. There are more than one seed planted per pot, so you can divide them.
I guess they're okay as long as they're not too overcrowded. They can survive altogether, but eventually you're going to get to the point where they do need to be separated out. But the other palm that I'm seeing everywhere these days and seems to be particularly sold as a cleaner of the air, as is often the case with the way houseplants are marketed these days, is the areca palm, Dipsis lutescens, which seems to be sold particularly in IKEA. There always seem to be loads of them in IKEA when I go in there. Is that one popular on your side of the ocean?
Extremely popular. In fact, that might be one of the most popular palms worldwide as an ornamental palm. In Florida, we grow them outside as hedges and dividers and barriers, but they are also grown as indoor plants, and they're lovely little indoor plants. The name lutescens means yellowish, and so that refers to the color of the petioles and the leaf bases and the trunk itself, which will sort of look like, when they get bigger, will look like kind of combs of bamboo with these yellowish leaf bases attached to them. So they're lovely little palms, and they're naturally clustering, although again, nurserymen put more than one seed per pot. But they're excellent palms.
And what other commonly available palms would you recommend for indoor growing?
The ones that are most commonly available in the trade, there are a couple species of Camedoria. We talked about the parlor palm, the Anthobella. That's Camedoria elegans. But there's another Camedoria that are a couple more that are very common. One is called the bamboo palm, and that's Camedoria saffritzii, although in the older books you'll see it listed as Camedoria erumpens. And that's a palm from the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, very easily grown in a indoor environment. It's pretty forgiving of dry conditions, so it will survive even if you forget to water it once in a while. And it's a naturally clustering species, very ornamental. And it gets to be maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 feet, 2 meters tall. Another Camedoria that it's one that you noticed was growing here in my living room is Camedoria cataractarum. This is called the cat palm. It's just short, has nothing to do with felines. It's just the shortened species epithet, cataractarum. And cataractarum means of the cataracts or of the rapids. This is a palm that naturally grows in or along the banks of fast-moving rivers and streams and rapids and that sort of thing. It's from southern Mexico. And it is naturally clustering, branching palm, although, again, nurserymen put lots of plants in one pot. And it's a beautiful little pinnate leaves, clustering plant, very flexible leaves. That's one of the characteristics of these plants that grow in fast-moving streams, is that they have very flexible parts so that the water doesn't break them. So that's a great little palm. And even though it grows in very wet conditions, it's, again, forgiving of being a little bit drier as it would be in our houses.
Given the current vogue for variegation among houseplant lovers, I couldn't think off the top of my head of any sort of variegated palms. But I'm sure there are loads, but I just couldn't think of any or couldn't remember seeing any. And I know that one of my listeners, June, was particularly interested in really unusual looking palms. So can you give her some suggestions on some palms that are really going to turn heads?
For centuries, the Japanese have been collecting variegated specimens of the lady palm. This is Rapis excelsa. And this is, again, a little clustering palmate-leafed palm that the leaves themselves are not a little bit bigger than your hand, but maybe, I don't know, maybe up to about 12 inches across, a foot across. Palmate leaves. So, you know, we distinguish between palmate and pinnate. Palmate leaves, so it looks like the hands with the fingers radiating from the palm of your hand. And they've collected all these different forms of variegation. Some are very subtle variegations, just lighter green stripes. Others are almost all cream with just a little bit of photosynthetic green tissue. They're very slow growing because, well, they're slow growing naturally even when they're all green, but then when their photosynthesis is reduced, they're even slower. And consequently, they are very, very expensive to buy. These are sought after by collectors. So they're available, but you have to be willing to pay quite a price for them. And they're a little bit finicky to grow. They're not as easy as some variegated houseplants, like a sansevieria, for example.
Tell me, is there a general list of care tips for palms? Or is it one of these things, well, we can't really generalize because they come from different climates and environments. And if you treat them all the same, you're going to kill half and make half happy.
Most of the plants that are most of the palms that are used as houseplants come from low light environments. And that's why they do well in houses, which typically don't have full sun in them. So I think generally speaking, we can say that the palms that are grown as houseplants like bright filtered light. They don't want to have direct sun, even if they're species that normally grow in full sun. For example, like the areca palm normally would grow in full sun and can grow in full sun, but it prefers, especially when it's grown as a houseplant, to have indirect light or filtered light. And that's the way they're grown in nurseries, so when you take it home, you don't want to put it in, you know, full sun because it wouldn't be accustomed to that. It would burn. So bright filtered light is good. And they don't want to be in deep, deep, dark, you know, windowless rooms. They want to have some light. And the other thing is they like to be moist, but not wet. And that's a general good rule of thumb for palms, even palms that come from very wet environments, the ones that do well as houseplants will tolerate moist but not wet soil.
What kind of watering is best achieves that solution? Is that a dousing once a week, or, you know, because I always wonder, should I be kind of like constantly dribbling water on this or to keep it moist, or is there a better way of doing that? You know, we've been talking recently on the show about things like wick watering and automatic watering systems. Does that work well for palms?
Yeah, it does. And your show from a few weeks ago about gesneriads with these wick watering pots, that would be perfect for small palms. That would work really well. I think, you know, a little dribble of water is not going to do it. You really want to soak the pot and, you know, until water runs out the bottom and then let it drain and leave it alone for a few days. And of course, the number of days depends on the size of the plant and the size of the pot and the conditions that it's growing in. And also the type of pot. A clay pot obviously will evaporate water through the walls of the pot, whereas a plastic pot won't. With clay pots, you can always, you know, put your hands in the pot, and if it feels cool, that means you've got water in the root ball and you're okay. When it doesn't feel cool to the touch, you know that the root ball is dry. That trick doesn't work with plastic pots, of course. But yeah, with my palms here at home, I give them a good dose of water when the upper surface of the soil is getting dry. When, you know, the upper inch or so of the soil is dry, that's when I give them a good soaking, and they're good for a few more days then.
And are there any really rare and unusual palms that we probably won't be able to get our hands on, but you really wish as a palm specialist were available to houseplant growers?
Oh yeah. There's some spectacular palms from particularly from high elevations, what are called cloud forests in places like Central America, that they just could not tolerate the low humidity and the conditions of you know that we live in. But they are spectacular palms. A lot of the genera Geonoma, Camidoria, these are spectacular. Some have some spectacular species with big, broad, undivided leaves. They're really amazing. And there's a Geonoma that has variegated leaves. That's would be a real challenge to grow as a houseplant, but it's a spectacular, beautiful palm.
One for the really committed palm enthusiast. What palm can you grow that's going to be as dramatic and impactful as our old friend, favourite friend of the moment, the fiddle leaf fig? Because I always feel a bit sorry for those people who go and buy a fiddle leaf fig and haven't given a look to some of the bigger palms. What palms can really make a dramatic statement in your house? Is it the Kentia palm that you need to be turning to?
That would be certainly near the top of the list, I think. That's kind of a high-end palm. It tends to be slow-growing, so consequently it takes a lot of time for growers to get it up to a marketable size. But it makes for a beautiful palm and graceful leaves, very tough. It grows very well indoors. Of course, it was very popular with the Victorians. If you look at any illustration of a Victorian parlor, drawing room, or dining room, you see the palms in the corners. Those are the Kentia palms. The botanical name for that is Hallea fosteriana. But yeah, spectacular palm. I think another really great palm, and it is available as a houseplant, and if you're good enough to keep it going, it makes for a great palm, and that's coconut. I know nurseries sell kind of sprouted coconuts as houseplants, and obviously it's a great conversation piece because you can see the coconut there on the surface of the soil, the plant coming up from it. And if you can get it bright enough light, because it does want bright light, it will grow and continue to pot it up and give it a bigger pot. It will continue to grow, and of course those leaves will eventually get 6 or 7 feet long, be quite dramatic. Doesn't have a lot of leaves. The leaves themselves will be long and big, so that'll be dramatic.
I'm not going to get a coconut, though, am I? Sadly, I think it's like trying to grow a banana inside. There's not going to be any actual crops coming off these plants. But hey,
No, it's just strictly ornamental.
Coming up later in the show, British Cactus and Succulent Society President Colin Walker will be back to answer a Q&A about a Mammillaria cactus that's gone a bit spineless. That's not right. And we'll also be finding out what's coming up in some future episodes. Exciting. And I wanted to know if Scott had an answer to the most common question I get about palms, which is, what can I do about browning leaf tips? Is the problem always a lack of humidity?
Often it is, yeah. Because these are palms from tropical rainforests. They like it steamy. And that's just not how our houses are, especially if you're living in a heated house in the winter or an air-conditioned house in the summer. So, humidity can be a problem. It also can be just a problem with salt buildup in the roots. If the water has a lot of dissolved minerals in it, or you're fertilizing it too much, salt can build up in the soils, and that can cause leaf tip browning. So one solution is just to repot it, change the soil, shake off some of the old soil, put in fresh compost, and see how that works. The other, for humidity issues, grouping plants together will help kind of form a little microclimate. So if you have other houseplants or other palms even, grouping them in all together in one kind of corner can make a little more humid microclimate. The other option would be to set them on trays of pebbles with a little bit of water. And the water line should not come up above the pebbles because you don't want the soil to actually absorb water. You just want evaporation from those pebbles to increase the humidity right around the plant.
And are there any really really tiny palms that we can grow. I mean, I guess there's some palm-like tiny plants, but are there any really, really small palms that are suitable for, you know, I mean, the terrarium trend is still going strong. Are there any really tiny compact palms that could go into a large bottle garden, or is that not going to happen?
I've seen the little Neanthobella, the parlor palms, grown at least for a while as terrarium plants. I've grown them in a terrarium, but eventually they will outgrow that space. There are, I can think of one Camaradoria, very rare endangered species from southern Mexico called Camaradoria turkheimii, and it has tiny little leaves. It might be one of the smallest palms in the world. And I could see that it would grow in a terrarium, but it's highly endangered and threatened by over-collecting, among other things. So I certainly won't recommend that. It's something people should try to get. So really, palms aren't the best plants for terraria culture. They're really not.
Talking about rare palms, are palms as a family under particular threat in the wild from collectors? Our desire to have these plants in our front rooms? Or is it habitat destruction as much?
It is really habitat destruction is certainly the number one problem threatening palms. There have been a few palms, like the Camaradoria I just mentioned, that have been threatened by over-collecting. People have actually gone in and ripped out plants from the wild to sell. Harvesting some seeds from the wild rarely threatens a population. Most seeds in the wild never survive to adulthood anyway. So taking them out and growing them in a nursery is not really harming the population. But it's most of the palms that we grow in as houseplants are produced, in vast quantities commercially. They're really not threatening the wild plants. In fact, Arica, the Arica palm, Diphis lutescens, is endangered in its native habitat in Madagascar. It's highly endangered. But in cultivation, it's one of the most commonly cultivated plants in the world. There are millions of them throughout the world. So, collectors are not going out into Madagascar to collect seeds of this palm. They just don't need to.
Is there any part of the world where palms are being reintroduced, where they've kind of got endangered and are there programs to try to reintroduce them? I'm thinking, where habitats have been totally destroyed and there's only a few plants left. Are there sort of lots of conservation work going on around the world?
There are some excellent projects going on. In Hawaii, for example, Hawaii has a several species of native palm in the genus Prichardia. And some of them are quite rare. Introduced animals like rats will eat the seeds. And so the plants in the wild have been under siege by introduced animals. And so there have been some efforts to remove the animals from the areas and trap the rats, kill the rats, and reintroduce plants that have been cultivated in a nursery and plant them out. And that's working. The same has happened on the Mexican island of Guadalupe, which is on the Pacific coast of Mexico. Again, goats and rats have totally decimated the population of an endemic species of Brea edulis. But the Mexican government has removed all the goats and trapped all the and killed all the rats. And so now the palm is now, the seeds are beginning to sprout and the palm is coming back. So those are just a couple of examples I can think of off the top of my head. But there are some great conservation programs going on for palms.
One thing I just wanted to ask you about, because I saw it on your Twitter feed and was just fascinated, was a picture of a bowl of seeds. I'm not sure if any of these were palms or not, but you wrote a little tweet about, I think it's called a hydrochory. Just tell me about these incredible drift seeds that you collect on beaches.
Oh, yeah. The bowl is actually sitting right in front of me here. Hydrochory is the term botanists use to describe dispersal by water. So it can be fresh water, it can be seawater. And some palms and many other kinds of plants are adapted to that kind of dispersal. And the bowl that I have in front of me, these are seeds and fruits picked up from beaches. So these are seeds and fruits that are dispersed by salt water, by the ocean currents. Okay, so the most familiar example that everybody knows is coconut. And the coconut has that big fibrous husk that is completely buoyant in water, will float for months and months, and the seed floats around. There's one seed per nut, and that floats around and will wash up on beaches and will germinate on its own that way. The coconut's not the only palm that is dispersed by water. There's a palm from Southeast Asia called Nipa fruticans, and this is a palm that grows in the mangrove habitats. That's that the habitats in kind of quiet estuaries, and it's sort of muddy, swampy areas on the coast. And it produces seeds that, again, have a fibrous husk that has a lot of air in it, trapped in it, and that means that the fruit is buoyant, and it actually disperses fruits after they've germinated. So they germinate on the mother tree, and they fall off, and they float around, and when they're washed ashore somewhere, the seedling will then put down roots, and it will grow. There are a lot of great palms that can be dispersed by water. Now, some of the palms that are in the seeds that are in my little bowl here are things that wash up on the beaches here in Florida, washed up from the Amazon, from South America, and they're not viable. They're dispersed by fresh water, and they get eventually washed out into the ocean, and they'll float, but they're not viable. They're dead.
But how fascinating that things can turn up that have been traveling for thousands of miles. There's a little bit of romance in there somehow.
I love it. Yeah, that's why I collect.
And from England, which has been incredibly hot recently, but certainly on a regular basis, by no means Florida, I guess your attitude to palms there is probably perhaps different from ours here, in that they're everywhere. They're growing all over the shop. Do you think there's a different kind of approach? I don't know if you've travelled to the UK at all, but, you know, do people treat palms differently there because they're so common and so ubiquitous?
I grew up here in Florida, so for me, palms are just as natural and a normal part of the environment, you know, both the native palms and all the introduced exotic ornamental palms. I think for us here, they're not maybe the symbol of exoticism that they are for you in the UK. I've traveled a lot to the UK, I work a lot with colleagues at Kew, and I always go to the palm house in Kew, and it's fun to see palms that I know from, you know, just outside my own garden. There they are, coddled under glass in this heated, amazing Victorian greenhouse. I think there's a difference just because they come up as weeds in my garden. I have to pull up little seedlings of some of the palms all the time because they're weeds.
Oh, I'm feeling very jealous right now. Are there any other palms, common palms, that we haven't talked about that we should discuss? I'm trying to go down my mental list of commonly grown palms, and I can't think of any more, but perhaps you can.
Yeah, let me give you a couple more. One of them is the fishtail palm. That's another clustering palm. But again, nurserymen throw more than one seed in the pot, so you get kind of instant clusters. And it's an unusual palm. This is the palm Caryotomitis. And the genus Caryota, there's only about 8 or 10 species. And they're unusual in that they have leaflets that sort of look triangular, like a fish's, the tail of a fish. And the leaf is bipinnate. It's the only palm with bipinnate leaves, so that's unusual. And it makes a great little houseplant, kind of a little more stiff, a little more upright than, say, an areca palm, but an interesting palm with an interesting texture.
Can you just explain what bipinnate means as opposed to pinnate? Because that's one of those ones that I'm never quite sure what the distinction is.
Okay, yeah. Pinnate, think of a feather. So a pinnate is like a feather. So you've got that central axis, or rachis, we call it. And then the leaflets are coming off of that, just as I don't know what they're called with feathers. Just as the feathery part comes off that central shaft of the feather. Bipinnate is different. I'm trying to think if there's a good example that most people would recognize. Bipinnate. I'm not thinking of a good example. bipinnate is different because you've got the central rachis, and then coming off of that, secondary stems or rachices, and then the leaflets coming off of that. So it's twice pinnate. That's bipinnate.
I'm thinking, I'm wondering whether an ash tree is bipinnate. Is that
a no, good... ash pinnate.
Oh, damn.
golden rain tree, Coulateria. Coulateria is bipinnate.
Okay. I'm going to have to go and study my leaf types clearly because... And was there one other palm you wanted to mention there? A fishtail palm we've done?
Yeah, another palm is the Chinese fan palm. And this, again, has fan-shaped leaves, palmate leaves, not pinnate leaves. This is Libosoma chinensis. It's from southern China and Southeast Asia, southern Japan, Taiwan. And it actually is a huge palm. It will grow to be a great huge palm outside, but is grown indoors kind of as a seedling. And the seedling leaves are a little broader and flatter, a little more decorative than the adult leaves. It's a great little palm. It will not live forever in the house because, like I say, it wants to be a big palm. But it will live many years as a seedling and a nice little fan-shaped leaves coming from it.
Well, I hope that's...
Maybe just one more. The Majesty Palm, this is Ravinia rivularis. This is from Madagascar. It's become popular in the last 10 years or so, and it grows, rivularis means of the rivers, so it actually grows in really wet areas of Madagascar, but again, it's forgiving of growing in slightly drier conditions as a houseplant, and that's a magnificent palm. It's again, it becomes a very large palm eventually, but as a young plant and as a houseplant, typically, again, sold with two or three plants per pot, makes a nice little houseplant. Well, not little, it can get 6 or so feet tall as a houseplant with pinnate leaves.
Well, that's plenty of options, I think, for everyone to start going out and expanding their palm collection. One other question I had was about potting soil. Is regular houseplant potting soil okay? Do you need to add any extra drainage, or what are they like?
I think most commercial houseplant potting mixes would be fine. I think a little extra drainage doesn't hurt, and if I were to add a little extra drainage, I'd use something a little heavier than perlite weighs nothing, and because these palms can get tall, you want and can be in kind of small pots, so they can get a little top heavy. So having a potting mix with maybe some coarse sand in it, because sand is heavier, and yet would aid the drainage. I think that would be a good thing for the larger palms.
Right, that's a good point. I guess when you've got a big plant, you don't want it to be toppling over. So much to guest Scott Zona there, who provided so much great information on palms. And if you missed any of those names, then check out my show notes at janeperrone.com, where Scott has contributed a wonderful set of notes on the palms we've talked about in this episode, and you can see pictures of them too. This will help you to really pin down exactly what palms you want to invest in. Also, just scrolling back a bit, shock horror, who knew that botanists don't actually have an official definition for what a tree is? That's blown my mind. And now it's time for Question of the Week. From time to time, I like to get a bit of a help with Question of the Week, and this week was one of those weeks. I called on former guest of the show, Colin Walker, president of the British Cactus and Succulent Society, to help me answer a question about a cactus. Danny sent me a before and after photo, so do have a look at the show notes while you're listening so you know what we're talking about. Danny says, I bought my little cactus about a year ago. It's alive, so that's good. But when I purchased it, it was a tiny ball with relatively terrifying spines. Since I've owned it, the spines on the new growth are minuscule, even non-existent in some areas. Is there anything I can do to get those crazy long spines back? And Danny has sent two photographs, one showing the cactus when it was purchased, and it looks kind of maybe golf ball shaped when it was bought, and another picture from a few months later in its rather spine-free state. Colin, have you got any thoughts on this?
What I would say is that this plant is not being given enough light. So cacti do come from environments where the light intensity is high, and I think this plant is suffering from lack of light. It is clearly growing, but it's not producing these, as she says, vicious, what did she say, terrifying spines. So my advice would be, I think the plant looks healthy enough, but it's not been given enough light. Now, for growing cacti as houseplants, I always recommend south-facing windowsills, if at all possible. So this plant, I think, is on a windowsill that, well, I'm guessing it's grown on a windowsill that's not got enough light. So the first thing to do with this plant is, if at all possible, give it a sunnier spot. It may not even be grown on a windowsill. I mean, some people just put them on tables in the middle of rooms and think they'll do fine. So succulents absolutely need a good light environment, and a sunny windowsill is best. So for your correspondent, Jane, I would say, yeah, move this plant to the sunniest possible spot in the house and then see what happens. She may also be overwatering it, which could cause it to grow too fast. So a sunny windowsill, the sunniest spot in the house, and don't give it much water. So a cactus like that in a warm, sunny windowsill position needs a small amount of water once a week. Don't drown it, just a small amount once a week. So a sunny windowsill, small amount of water, and let's see what happens. How does that sound?
That sounds like a good plan. I mean, will those spines start growing, or are they going to stay like that if they've already been kind of, if it's already been sort of limited by lack of light?
If it's given the right conditions, i.e. low water and a sunny spot, hopefully it will start producing that. What the left-hand photograph shows for this plant, if you look at it, this shows the typical structure of a cactus. So this cactus has a circle of spines coming from a structure that's called an areole. So all cacti have this structure. So there's a radial arrangement of spines coming from this central point, which is the areole. So those smaller star-like spines are the radial spines, and there's one longer spine pointing upwards, which is the central spine. So what this cactus is doing on the right, this one that's suffering a bit, it's producing these radial spines, these shorter spines, but not the central spines. So it's, as I say, it's not got enough light, I would suspect. So if it's given a sunny windowsill, I would expect it to start growing more typically. And what will then happen is it will start producing these stronger central spines. So you're going to have a ring around this plant where it's not grown so well. So where central spines haven't been formed, they won't be formed again. But the new growth at the top, hopefully, given the right conditions, should start producing them. So you've got kind of, you'll have this sort of ring where the growth isn't kind of typical for the plant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think that's great advice for Danny. And as you say, when you make changes to how you're looking after a plant, you can't expect an immediate result.
No.
It might be months before she sees much of a change, but hopefully...
I mean, the plant on the right-hand photograph looks generally okay. It's just not producing these stronger spines, and I think the main cause is poor light conditions.
I hope that helped, Danny. If you've got a question for On the Ledge, you know what to do. Drop me a line to ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com. Leave a message with me on my Facebook page, On the Ledge Pod, or you can even post it in our Facebook group, Houseplant Fans of On the Ledge, which is generally a great place to chat and meet other people who are listening to the show. Those of you who are Patreon subscribers of $5 a month or more, my legends, will be hearing from Colin very soon when I put up a couple of Patreon episodes featuring him. One of them is talking about how to prepare plants for the show bench, with a bit of added info about succulent bonsai, which is rather fascinating. And the other one is all about agaves. So do look out for those. They'll be dropping in the next week. Thank you to my new Patreon subscriber, Rocket Skates, great name. And if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, it's quite simple. Just visit patreon.com/ontheledge and sign up there. If you're not too sure how the whole thing works, do have a look at my show notes where there are full details and links to an FAQ. And if you want to give a one-off donation, you can do that via ko-fi.com. Again, details in the show notes. The long-awaited episode about Phalaenopsis orchids, those are moth orchids, will be coming up in a couple of weeks. But next week, I will be talking to the legend that is Houseplant Journal, a.k.a. Daryl Cheng. He'll be bringing his engineer's approach to houseplant care and telling us all about his obsession with monsterers. Show to a close. Thanks so much to my sponsors this week, always Kalanchoe and Care Of. I'll be back next week with another leaf-filled episode. May your compost be fluffy and your plants mite-free. Bye! Music you heard in this week's episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, Whistling Rufus by the Heftone Banjo Orchestra, An Instrument the Boy Called Happy Day Gakana by Samuel Corwin, and Oh Mallory by Josh Woodward, all licensed under Creative Commons. See my website for details.